Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
Governor Andrew Cuomo is floating the possibility that New York may have to raise taxes to close a pandemic-related budget gap. Those remarks are encouraging advocates of imposing higher taxes on the wealthy. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
As the months have stretched on with no new federal bailout package that includes help for states coping with COVID-related costs, Cuomo has begun to talk about ways to close what he says is a $15 billion budget gap. And he says new taxes will be part of that plan.
I believe we're going to have to raise taxes at the end of the day.
The governor didn't specify what kind of taxes he has in mind, but his words heartened many progressive groups and state lawmakers who have long advocated for higher taxes for the state's richest residents. They say many of the state's 118 billionaires have seen their wealth increase during the pandemic. The legislative leaders, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who are both Democrats, are on record favoring increased taxes on the wealthy. Speaker Hastie has raised the possibility of the legislature returning for a December session to address tax increases. At a recent news conference on Zoom, Senator Alessandra Biaggi, a Democrat from the Bronx, said 9 months into the pandemic, it's time to act.
If we do not enact revenue raisers, if we do not make sure that we close this budget deficit, all of our communities are not going to recover, and that will be blood on our hands. And I am not okay with that.
In addition to increasing the state's top income tax brackets, advocates also support restoring the stock transfer tax. For years, that sales tax on stock transfers has been rebated back to investors. There's also a proposal for a pied-à-terre tax in New York City. It would raise tax rates on luxury homes owned by part-time residents. Many of the tax increases were first proposed before the pandemic hit. Advocates, believing in a more equitable distribution of income, wanted the additional revenues to provide more services to the needy. Cuomo says whatever taxes he might ultimately agree to, they must be limited to what's needed to balance the budget.
It's not just a political decision, it's a revenue decision. How much money do you need to balance the budget?
The governor has also repeatedly warned that taxing the state's wealthiest will only cause them to leave New York. The governor spoke during a teleconference with reporters back in September.
It puts the state at a competitive disadvantage because other people can go to other states, and taxes are very high in the state to begin with.
E.J. McMahon, with the fiscally conservative watchdog group the Empire Center, agrees with Cuomo that at least some wealthy individuals will leave the state if taxes are raised. He says multimillionaires and billionaires often own more than one home, so it would not be that difficult to shift more of their time to a house in a different state and establish their residency there.
The 1-3% of the highest earners leave New York, of the ones there are, and it could have a very significant effect on revenues because each one of them pays so much in taxes.
Some advocates of higher taxes on the wealthy remain unsympathetic. Senator Luis Sepulveda was also part of that Zoom press conference.
Millionaires leaving, if we increase taxes, well, I say I will open the door and make sure it doesn't hit them in the ass on the way out. Because if you're that wealthy and you don't have a concern about helping your fellow man, helping people that are in dire poverty and with health issues and health crisis, and if you don't have the heart to want to say, I will contribute more to help millions of people, then leave the state, find another place to live. We'll find other millionaires that are chomping at the bits to move into this state.
Cuomo is not ready to make any decisions yet. Leaders in Congress are trying to reach agreement on a relief package before the holidays. Cuomo says if that measure does not include a bailout for states, he'll wait until after President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated on January 20th, with the hope that another relief package can be passed then. The state's fiscal year does not end until March 31. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, is mad at the federal government for a number of things. Let's start with the fact that we have a new strain, a mutant strain now, of the coronavirus. It's been discovered in the UK. They are now largely isolated as countries have been closing their borders. We see the governor arrange an agreement with a number of the airlines to get testing done before people travel, but he's already convinced it's probably here. And he's saying, once again, the U.S. government has fallen behind like they did originally with the virus that came in through Europe.
Not only does he think it's here, but Anthony Fauci thinks it's here, and it probably is. The question, of course, is, and the governor certainly is appropriate in raising this, are the new vaccines going to be able to handle that? We're being told they are. However, when push comes to shove, we'll find out. Look, this governor has his hands full. He has always had his hands full. New York, of course, is in so many ways the capital, the center of the world. You know, people will continue to come here. They have to, or they think they have to. And the result of that is the spread of this coronavirus. And here is Andrew Cuomo sitting here. He wrote a book about the first round. It may have been a little premature. Nevertheless, you know, he had worked very hard on it, and he became sort of the nation's governor, as he went on television every day and he talked about what we had to do in order to protect ourselves and gave the facts as opposed to that phony miscreant president of the United States who kept saying, it's not coming here, not coming here, and who Cuomo called upon to make sure that in the COVID relief bill there would be money for state and local governments, and his ally, or otherwise known as his frenemy, that's Trump's frenemy, Mitch McConnell, wouldn't allow that to happen. So Cuomo has his hands full, and what he's going to do is ride out this storm. And when the storm is over, he can hope that he's standing. I can hope he's standing in terms of his popularity. So far, it's holding up.
There may be one out if he's called to be the Attorney General of the U.S.
Well, I've written about it. I've asked him about it. The chances of that happening now are not that good. They're putting out a whole bunch of names. In the beginning, his name was appearing peripherally. Now it's not. If I were Cuomo and Joe Biden asked me to be the Attorney General of the United States, I'd jump at it. He's got a lot of problems here. He says he won't. He's dedicated to the people of New York. He will be here. But of course, as I've always said, you don't say you're going to the prom until somebody asks you, either on Sadie Hawkins Day, the woman asked the man, or the other way around, because you would look silly if you said, I want to go there, and you're not chosen. A good example of that is Bernie Sanders, who made it clear he'd like to be the labor secretary. Well, that felt like a lead balloon, and there we are.
And as you point out, the governor's got big problems, mainly the financial one, and how to fill the budget gap. The bottom line is, will they have to raise taxes? The governor is floating that possibility. We have a story from our Karen DeWitt in the program this week about it. And that gives certainly a boon to those progressives in the legislature who would like to tax the ultra rich.
Hey, David, we've been talking about this for a long, long time on this program. I've been saying that the two chiefs of the legislative houses, Andrea Stewart Cousins and Carl Hastie, are for it. Now we're at a point in our development where I think Andrew Cuomo is going to have very little choice. Now, of course, he'll be waiting for the incoming president, hopefully, Joe Biden, who will be in a position to help him get what he needs to help the state. And luckily for Cuomo, he's not alone. There are lots of Republican governors, too, who need that help. In which case, they have to go to taxing the rich and the very rich. The question is, it always starts with the billionaires, and then it starts coming down. Let's say it comes down to a couple of $100,000 a year. Now, average New Yorkers are not going to be happy because they all see themselves in a position, even if they're not making it, that someday they will be, and they don't want to be overtaxed. That is dangerous for Cuomo because he's going to have to raise a lot of money if they go this route.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Congress has reached a deal on a $900 billion coronavirus relief package, but it does not contain direct aid for state and local governments. For the New York State Association of Counties and County Executives in the state, that's a problem. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Democratic Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer says New York will receive roughly $54 billion.
There's more to be done. This is not a stimulus. It's an emergency survival bill. So today is a good day, but it's not the end of the story.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro is president of the New York State County Executives Association, an affiliate of the New York State Association of Counties, or NYSAC.
When we needed a lifeline, they gave us a sucker punch. And I'm hopeful that come the new year, there will be a realization that this country will not claw its way out of the economic condition, nor will we overcome this crisis without supporting local government partners.
Democrats in Congress say a bigger package with direct local aid would come in the new year under the Biden administration. Again, Molinaro.
I can assure you we are not counting on anything if it demands universal acceptance in Washington. That said, we are hopeful.
Democratic Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan is also hopeful.
I'm hopeful that there will be more, and I'm hopeful that the president-elect has said this is a down payment, which is encouraging, and that next round absolutely has to include direct support to state and local governments, because we made it through this year with our budget, and we were able to hold the line on taxes, but going into another year of this, that's going to be next to impossible to do.
Schumer, on a call Monday with reporters, says Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is responsible for obstructing direct aid.
We have found some other ways to get the states and localities some money through education, transportation, vaccine distribution.
Schumer says he is optimistic such aid would come under a Biden administration, regardless of whether Democrats take the majority in the Senate.
I think there's a good chance, even if we don't get the majority, a better chance if we do. But I think, you know, Donald Trump was one of the barriers here. He was saying he didn't want it. I think when Republican senators and congressmen saw that his negativity on COVID aid in general helped Joe Biden win the election, without him there as president, I think we have a better chance to get Republicans to join us in getting state and local aid. Joe Biden has told me he's going to make it a high priority and try to work on a bipartisan way to get something done. So I'm hopeful.
NYSAC Executive Director Stephen Aquario says he's disappointed the relief package lacks direct state and local aid, but says the New York congressional delegation did its part advocating for it.
This is a natural disaster. And up to this point in time, when Florida has multi-billion dollar impact with hurricanes, or Texas or Louisiana or Alabama, the United States stands up and sends aid to those states. In California, if it's earthquakes or if it's fires, these are natural disasters, and there is aid that is sent to them accordingly. Every state had a natural disaster with COVID. It is the role of the federal government to support the emergency management operations for the states and the local governments. And in this particular case, the counties of New York are responsible for executing the pandemic response at the local government level. We need resources. We're not getting those resources.
Molinaro says without direct aid.
Well, I don't know how they expect us to do our job. County governments, local governments have been on the front line of responding to this pandemic. And as vaccine distribution gets underway, we play another critical role, all while providing the direct services that people expect from us.
He gives an example of how local governments are affected.
You know, snowstorm after snowstorm after snowstorm, with staff thin to begin with, some isolating because of potential contraction of the virus, or those who test positive mean that wait times on snow removal is longer. It means that the ability to clear up after a storm is a little bit longer, which threatens public safety.
He says taking a bit longer to clear up after a storm was the case with the recent nor'easter. Poughkeepsie had highway department personnel out with COVID, and some county departments also were thin for the same reason. Ulster County's Ryan says it is frustrating to have the calls for state and local aid go unanswered.
We have been on the front lines of this, running testing centers, planning vaccine distribution and about to execute vaccine distribution, running food delivery efforts and so much more, all while losing revenue due to the economic impacts of shutting things down.
As part of the package, eligible individuals would receive stimulus checks of $600. Schumer wanted $1,200 per person.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustino. As the coronavirus pandemic continues to shutter senior centers to in-person activities, many organizations are scrambling to keep their members engaged at home. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King has an in-depth look at this serious aging issue.
Instructor James Sokol has been entertaining quite a few guests these past few months. In his latest Zoom seminar titled Exploring Opera, Jewish Treasures, over 100 seniors and opera aficionados from across the country danced in their bedrooms, brushed up on theater history, and shared memories of their favorite performances. It's one of a number of Zoom programs being offered to Jewish community centers nationwide via the National JCC Adult and Senior Alliance, which Sokol also directs. Sokol says the alliance started as a way to boost programming for local JCCs during the pandemic, with the added bonus of employing a few of his musical peers on the side. But mostly, after months of shoehorning in-person events onto online platforms, Sokol says he wanted to curate something that actually felt comfortable over Zoom.
We set them up as meetings, not as webinars, because honestly, I find the webinars to be a little bit cold. Whereas a meeting, you know, you see other people, you're involved with other people, you know you're a part of something.
Attendees can register for the events online through their cooperating JCC or Eventbrite.com. If opera isn't your forte, have no fear. Through the Alliance, centers like Albany's Sydney Albert JCC are also hosting travel seminars, cocktail hours, and cheese and brownie tastings. In person, you can still attend the occasional masked-up, spaced-out art or fitness class. Otherwise, programming coordinator Lisa Morlitz says online events have been a lifesaver.
Our goal with all these programs, we also have other programs that we run ourselves, things like Book Mavens, Eye on the World is a virtual discussion group that's coming back. We're just trying to make sure our seniors and our older adults don't feel isolated at home.
Likewise, LifePath director Monica Beckman says its Capital Region locations largely shut down in November, with dining centers resorting to grab-and-go meals. While she says many seniors and senior centers have worked out how to handle essential needs like grocery delivery and telemedicine, socialization remains tricky. In some ways, she considers LifePath lucky. Its centers offer Zoom classes on subjects ranging from floral design to yoga and Tai Chi. And thanks to donations and grants, they have a number of laptops and tablets on hand to lend seniors for these programs. Beckman says LifePath will even teach seniors how to use that technology. What it can't do, unfortunately, is grant them the power to use it.
Well, we're talking to internet providers but haven't had any luck in getting anyone to give people free internet, which is really a big lift. I mean, it's really not something we can expect. So although we have a reasonable participation, up to 20 people at our sessions, there are still so many seniors that we are not able to reach other than our reassurance phone calls, which we make hundreds of them every week.
Beckman says those calls have long been used to help identify seniors' needs. But at this point in the pandemic, many callers are simply asking seniors about their day.
Some people we speak to just about every day. Many people get a weekly call. Some are down to once a month because they feel they've got family nearby.
LifePath also has a weekly telesupport group for at-home caregivers who Beckman says have also been particularly isolated and stretched thin by the pandemic. She says senior centers are offering as many online programs as they can, but ultimately these conversations go a long way, especially during the holiday season when feelings of loneliness are more common. While health officials across the country are pleading with families to avoid holiday gatherings, Beckman says they can still find ways to stay connected. She advises families to give their loved ones a call, and seniors don't be afraid to reach out first.
I'm a little bit older. I have children and grandchildren, and they live all over the country. And if I just wait for them to call me, I'm waiting a little bit longer. They're always happy when I reach out to them also, and then they can carve out 15 minutes or so to chat with me.
Morlett says the Albany JCC has been holding a number of online Hanukkah events for its members and will hold a second night of Zoom celebrations Wednesday. As for Sokol, he says the Alliance is ramping up production as well, and he expects the events to continue well after the pandemic.
I get emails after almost every program. You know, I'm a senior who is living in a senior community. I'm basically locked in my room all day. We're not even allowed to go to our social halls or have dinners together. And these programs are a lifeline to me. So the response has been just overwhelmingly positive.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Mille grazie.
Prego, prego. See you next week.
LifePath currently maintains 4 living centers in Cohoes, Watervliet, and 2 in Albany. In addition to its programs, the Albany JCC has links to a number of free audiobooks, classes, and large print puzzles for seniors on its website. For more information on the Zoom classes and the rest of WAMC's special series on aging, go to WAMC.org. I'm Jesse King.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino. COVID-19 has taken a toll on businesses across the country. And as the Legislative Gazette's Jackie Orchard found out, zoos are having a wild ride during the pandemic as well.
Some parts of life at the Utica Zoo are the same as before the COVID-19 pandemic, like this flamingo mating dance on a recent day. But Executive Director Andrea Heath says just about everything else about how the Utica Zoo used to function has had to change due to the pandemic. She says animal handlers would stand amid crowds of kids while they pet a lizard or a snake for the first time, which can no longer happen. She says before, interaction was encouraged for zoo visitors to learn more about conservation research and endangered species, but that's discouraged now. Other aspects of the zoo are being seen in a new light today, like the $60,000 grant it received for a new playground.
But with the pandemic, we really can't let children play on it because they'll be touching it, they'll be running into each other with coughing and sneezing, etc., and just being kids.
Although the playground is newly built, Heath is postponing the ribbon cutting until spring, when she hopes there will be a readily available vaccine. The Utica Zoo is a nonprofit that receives a subsidy from Oneida County of about $300,000 a year. Heath says in 2011, the annual budget was about $800,000 a year, but the zoo has grown and the budget is now about $2.3 million, most raised through donations, animal adoptions, admission, and special events.
Like an annual brew fest, wine in the wilderness, spooktacular extravaganza. We also have a lot of education programs, birthday parties, Zoomobiles, etc. But every one of those items that I just mentioned to you have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. In fact, we were closed to the public due to the New York State executive order for 107 days.
As New York went on pause, the Utica Zoo was shuttered from March through July.
And the problem with that is our peak season, and about 70% of our annual revenue is achieved during those summer months.
Heath says the pandemic has led to a budget deficit of about $1 million and fears there's no way to bridge that gap.
And we couldn't cut the expenses that dramatically because we were still taking 24-hour-a-day care of our animals. And that meant staff time, food, utilities, you know, veterinary care, everything that goes into taking care of the zoo.
She says she was trying to make up for it with new events like Bright Nights at the Utica Zoo, for which they erected several holiday light structures for families to walk around, see Santa Claus, and attend a live reading of The Night Before Christmas. But the zoo had to cancel the event on December 3rd due to an increase in local coronavirus infections. Heath says revenue from admissions was higher than last year's numbers in September, October, and November, likely due to people tired of being cooped up inside. But that momentum is starting to drop off as the weather gets colder. Instead, the zoo is reminding supporters as the holidays approach that they can make a donation in someone's name as a tax-deductible gift. Heath says it's good for people to remember that in a time when we are all encouraged to physically distance and many gyms are closed, the zoo spans over 80 acres, 30 of which are developed, and the zoo is open 363 days a year.
So someone can take a brisk walk a few times around the zoo and feel like they're getting a few miles in, and at the same time stop and look at an exotic or a domestic animal.
Heath wants people to know the zoo is safe, with every staff member masked up, even if they spend more time with the animals than people. Like Stephanie Hylinski, a lead keeper at the Utica Zoo.
So right now in the children's zoo, I'm working with the pigs, alpacas, zebu, the red fox. Our palace cat Tater was one of my favorites. And yeah, he's super cute. And then some other kind of farm type animals, goats and sheep and chickens and other animals like that.
Hylinski says the pandemic has taken away the interactive and educational element of her job.
Really what we're doing at this point is doing everything we can to prevent people from congregating. So when normally we would do like a sea lion chat every day, we no longer do that. We still obviously feed the sea lions, but we do it at times that are not announced just to prevent people from kind of grouping together. And then with our petting zoo as well, we don't allow people to feed the animals at this time for the safety of the animals and for the safety of our visitors.
Hylinski says when the pandemic ends, it's that interaction she is looking forward to most. Heath says when physical distancing is no longer a problem and the population is vaccinated, the zoo will be bringing its A game, ready for a big comeback.
Times are tough right now, and some of the programs that we're able to offer, or even our days at the zoo, might seem a little bit scaled back, but don't judge us on that and write us off for a future visit, because once COVID 19 restrictions are lifted, I think we're all going to be really thirsty to ramp up and just make things really exciting and fun and hands-on.
For more information on the Utica Zoo, go to WAMC.org. Reporting from Utica, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jackie Orchard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. As for program number 2052. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.